So, let's see. Very often, Chazal and the Medrash try to fill in the blanks that the text doesn't provide. In many cases, there are complementary reads to the actual text. So we talked about that if you remember in the Akedah, so at the Akedah, it's very clear that Avram is submitting his will to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, dispossessing his humanity to fulfill the unknowable divine decree. We had the Midrash make him into a human being who cares about his son and who worries about whether this is a morally sound act. So very often, the Medrash is a parallel to the actual text in creating a balanced read. I want to share with you a few Rashis about someone that the text provides very little information about. When we climb into Yaakov's inner world, we see him at this mountain, looking at the ladder. We know Rachel's suffering, we cry with her, we suffer with her. But Leah seems like a straw figure. We don't really know who Leah is. She's the one who's always being second place, and she's the one who's swapped in. And we don't really know much about her inner life. So Rashi spends a disproportionate amount of time filling us in who Leah was, what her thought pattern was. In particular, as she gives birth to various children and names them, because naming in Parshas Vayetzeh is very iconic. And she's possessed with Ruach HaKodesh, so a lot of the names are based on how she sees the future unfolding, but a lot of the names are just what she's feeling during this process. So I want to show you how Rashi tries to pay a little more attention to Leah and place us in her world and let us appreciate who she is as a person. But before that, hi Yitz, come. Hi Yitz, this is Yitzi from Philadelphia, he's visiting. So come, let him come in a little bit. So we're talking about some Rashi, Yitzi, before Rashi and the Parsha. But beforehand, I want to share two statements of Rav Amital that were very famous in Parshas Vayetzeh. Aaron, sit down. Aaron, you're the guest. Okay. Number one, Rav Amital wanted to know, what does it mean for stones to squabble and to talk? You remember the stones all arguing, I want Yaakov to put his head? So Rav Amital read that as a metaphor. And it was so amazing that Rav Amital didn't have a high school education, but was able to read deep metaphors into these Mamari Chazal. He's more in stone squabbling. It's that life is complex. And there are various needs, and the needs often conflict, and you can't solve all the needs, and you can't resolve them all. And stones don't mean stones, it means different needs are vying for your interest and your attention. And the tzaddik is trying to harmonize them all, and you really can't. Maybe a tzaddik can, but Am Yisrael can. So when the stones get together, and there's a national element, then they converge into one. But a person, you can't solve everyone's needs all the time. Life is, when you're young, you see the world in black and white, and you're going to just reach perfection, you're going to take care of everyone's needs, and you realize there are many stones, and you can't solve them all. And number two, Rav Amital was very opposed to sanitizing the poor word. Yaakov definitely kissed Rachel. Now, it doesn't mean we can kiss women. Our world is different. Chazal made certain takanos. But you have to treat Chazal as human beings. Chazal and the Avos as human beings. You don't want to, God forbid, anyway, degrade who they were or read them based on crass motives that filter through our world. But if to treat them as human beings and realize that as human beings they were incredibly inspiring, and to learn from them as humans, not just as people with Ruach HaKodesh who climb ladders and change the world. So those are two bits of introduction that Rav Amital would always speak about during Vayetzeh to help us understand Leah. So Leah's first son is named Reuven. So we all believe Reuven means she's proud that she has a child. She says this with a lot of pride. She's been the discarded one, the discriminated one. Yeah, but she has a child. Reuven, I have a child. I've reached some importance. Rashi says no. She's defending her child. Why is she defending her child? Because Reuven is going to have a very complicated life. Because he's the Bechor. But ultimately, his Bechor status is usurped by Yosef. And to a degree by Yehuda, although she doesn't speak about Yehuda. So Rashi says, Amru, she says, Re'u ma bein b'ni levein chambi. Compare my son to my father-in-law's Bechor. Who is her father-in-law? We don't really see them ever being together, but who is Leah's father-in-law? So my father-in-law also had a Bechor. But when his Bechor was usurped, he became a murderer, he became angry. My son will live a life of usurpation. He'll be the victim. Not only that, but my father-in-law's Bechor, Esav, trivialized the Bechor, just selling an office if it were just done. A pot of cholent. The Zelo Machlo Yosef. Reuven will never sell it. He'll never trivialize it or devalue it. Below Ira love, and he won't argue about it, even though it'll be taken from him. And not only that, but who tries to save Yosef from the bar is Reuven. Below Od, Ela Shalira love, and Shabikish Lotzir Minabor. So this is Leah taking pride in Reuven's life and career as a Bechor. Wait a second. That's not the way we read the text. Reuven is not criminal, but he's a failed Bechor. For some reason, He's always on the raw end. He gets involved in changing his father's bed in Parshas Vayishlach, and Chazal say either he did or he didn't commit something very, very grave 2 days in the Maran Shabbos, and he doesn't save Yosef sufficiently, and he's the one that accuses the brothers. Aval Hashem Manachem, I told you that the reason we're suffering now in Mitzrayim is because, and because of that, Yaakov is very critical of him, and snaps, and basically strips him of the Bahor, Pachas Kamayim Al Tosak. So the way we read Reuven's life, he's a fallen or a failed Bechor. It's nothing criminal, but he's not able to live the life that a Bechor demands. You're a Bechor? You know, there's an old line in the Bechor, people complain it's not fair. The Bechor gets Pishnayim, it's not fair. The Bechor is when we get together, we say, that's all. We have to get Pishnayim, or we have to live through. We have to get Pishnayim, we should get 10 times in that. It's not his fault, but Leah is taking pride in her child's life as a Bechor. She's a mother, exactly. Mothers always see children favorably, sometimes disproportionately, sometimes prejudiciously. So she's seeing a reality that we're not seeing. But we are seeing through her eyes the way a mother sees her child, even though it's not necessarily accurate. In psychology, it's called the lioness syndrome, where when a mother feels that her child is vulnerable, she goes into lioness mode, where she'll protect the lion cubs at any
cost.
She's seeing it, she's giving a spin. Of course, there's no falsehood here. She's giving it a spin. And for Rashi, it's important for us to see it through Leah's eyes. Because this is a mother who will suffer, so to speak, at that second layer. At the first level, she suffers because she's the discarded wife. At the second layer, she suffers because her son won't enjoy the Bechor and will be snatched from him by her co-wife's Bechor Yosef. So it's hard for her, but she's taking pride in her son's role. And at least he didn't trivialize it. At least he didn't sell it. At least he wasn't contentious about it. So that's interesting when she names him. Now, she also names her son Gad. Now, Gad is also very interesting because the simple interpretation, Bagad, Gad is essentially luck, Rashi says. I'm good fortune. There was actually an Avodah Zarah called luck by Rashi. The language of Rashi is Bam Mazal Tov. That's Rashi's language. I've got good luck. And he quotes the Gemara in Shabbos and a pasuk in Yeshaya that says these are people that build ritual tables for God for good luck that was associated with hocus pocus and witchcraft rather than just whatever. We don't believe there's anything called luck, but we feel existentially that we've come to luck that we don't deserve. There's no such thing as luck. Everything is preordained. But sometimes at a human level, we feel like, oh, well, this came from nowhere. What? I got lucky. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu choreographs everything in Shemayim. But Rashi has the following problem, okay? If he was called God because Bagad, because good luck has arrived, why does the Torah write Bagad as one word? To read Ba, or Bagad, Beis Aleph God, Bagad, good luck has come. But in the Pasuk, with Tamar Leah, Bagad, Beis Gimel Dalet. Right, so who does she feel betrayed by? Bagad, Beis Gimel Dalet, means betrayed. Who did she feel betrayed by? She felt betrayed by Yaakov. Why did she feel betrayed by Yaakov through the process of God? Not because of Rachel, but because of Zilpah. She said, why did you take my handmaiden, my servant, and live with her as a wife? Rashi's language is, Bagad, Rashi says, Davar achar lama nikreis teva achas Bagad, k'mal Bagad it be, you betrayed me. When you took my handmaiden Zilpah, he committed adultery. She feels she's been violated through adultery. Now, is that really true? It's interesting to think about why Zilpah is married to Yaakov. We know what role Bilhah plays. Bilhah has to be the surrogate mother because Rachel can't have children. And for Rachel, there's a bit of a triumph and a vindication when Bilhah has children. Although even in Rachel's case, she also goes through this very complex process in which her first child, through Bilhah, is called Dan. What does Rashi say? Danani vizikani, danani vichivani. God judged me and indicted me. God judged me and found me meritorious. She also feels something. On the one hand, she has a child now. She has a status in the family. On the other hand, it's not from her womb. So she feels judged and incriminated, but also vindicated. So life isn't always about perfection and feeling one emotion all the time. There's a lot of complexity in life. And you can feel both high and low, happy and sad, successful and failure. And Rachel feels that. And to a degree, Leah feels that. Because on the one hand, the more children she has, the more her status and influence in the family will grow. So when God is born, she calls him Bagat, I've got good luck. But she says it in a way that also reveals that she feels a little bit hurt. To no fault of Yaakov, it isn't like deceptive, he didn't cheat on her, chas v'shalom. She did it willfully. But she feels, I understand why my sister has to allow some other woman to enter into the marriage, but why should I have to? But she has to because she needs the children. She can't have that many children.
She gave permission.
So she obviously sponsored it, she approved it, but she's reflecting the fact through this name and the way she conjugates the name that she feels complex emotions. Let me give you an example because I see, you know, adults understand this because when you go through life is not always black and white. Life is always good or bad. The Gemara in Baba Basra says, so let's say your rich uncle passes away and you inherit $10 million. You have to make two brachas. To make a Baruch Dayan HaEmes because you're sad. And then a second later, you have to make a Hatov HaMeitiv or a Shechiyan because you're wealthy. You have to thank Hashem. So could you imagine? You're standing at the Kever and you say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Okinu Melech HaOlam, Dayan HaSem. You say, Shechiyanu V'Kimanu. You don't do it that way, obviously. And it's a metaphor. But it shows you that sometimes in life you have to feel multiple emotions. And Rashi's not afraid to give us this peephole into Leah's heart. And she's constantly struggling with, on the one hand, she's the second wife and she's discarded. Her son will be a failed Bechor, but she wants to take pride in what he will accomplish as opposed to Esau. She compares Reuben to Esau. She feels triumphant that she has more children, but she feels a little sad that the cost is introducing another child into the family. And it comes to the fore with Issachar. Issachar is born from her womb. But why is he called Issachar? So the pasuk says he's called Issachar because Hashem gave her schar, she says. Let me read the Rashi first before I read the pasuk. Okay? Rashi, Leah meets Yaakov because she now sleeps with Yaakov that night. She sleeps in her tent because Leah gave Rachel the flowers, the roses. So, Elai Tavo, she says, Ki Sachar Schartika Beduda Ebeni. Why is it called Yisachar? A Peifi. That's very demeaning. That a woman of her stature, having so many children, has to pay. We wouldn't say the word, but what word do we use? It's a P word when we talk about paying for sexual. It's amazing that she has to lift it. But Rashi switches it. Rashi says, Sechor Schartika. Rashi's language is, Nasati L'Rachel Schara. That I've been rewarded. Look at the Pasuk Yudchas. Why, what is it? How does the Torah say Yitzchak is called? Atamalei Nasan Elokim Schari. Not that I paid money, but I've been rewarded. So the Pasuk writes that Leah, the naming of Yitzchak, is proud. Hashem gave me the reward for all my suffering and all my patience and the fact that I'd allow all this circus to happen around me. But what's also happening in the actual Rashi is she's saying, I'm calling Yisachar because I recognize that I'm at the state that I still have to pay for Yaakov to be with me. Yisachar has a double entendre. God has a double entendre. Reuven has. So these names, and even Dan has a double entendre, where these women are processing very difficult conditions to live with Yaakov, four wives. And there's obviously a struggle that's taking place for the future of the Jewish people. And each of them is triumphant, but no one is fully triumphant because the nature of life is you have to live with other people, and you're not always going to get everything you want, and not all needs will be served. So let's repeat the four children we spoke about. Number one, Reuven. Reuven is a fallen Bechor, but Leah takes pride in the fact that he's not Esau. At least he's not Esau. At least when he falls, he doesn't become murderous and contentious and antagonistic. Rachel calls Dan, I was judged. I was judged favorably, but I'm still being judged disfavorably because Hashem hasn't given me my own children. But God, I feel so fortunate. All of a sudden, I've got all these children, even from my handmaidens. But I feel a little betrayed that I have to sink to this level to allow Zilpah. Rachel needs Bila. Why do I need Zilpah? And it's an interesting question on its own. Why does Zilpah enter the picture? We know what role Bila plays. Is it to create even and parity? Well, why does Zilpah have to marry to Yaakov? And then finally, Yisachar, where the Torah's language is Sachar Schartika. I paid for you. Rashi says, I get the Schar. Kadosh Baruch Hu provided the Schar. And Leah comes back to that, Hashem Nasana Lakim Schari. Not that I paid money, but I received Yisachar as the Schar for all my suffering and all my forbearance. So everyone's a real person, even the Avos, and even our Imals, and they had Ruach HaKodesh. for the living through very difficult conditions, like the stones, you can't have everything, and life's not about necessarily trying to make everything perfect and solve everything, but trying as best as you can. And in your own heart, when you feel these conflicting emotions, that's real. That's, don't try to avoid it. Don't try to ignore when you're sad. Don't forget the reasons you have to be happy. When you're happy, don't forget the reasons you're sad. When you're successful, don't forget your vulnerability. It's about realizing not to feel one emotion in a unidimensional fashion. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Enjoy the off Shabbos. Where's everyone going?
To where?
Tufin, wow. What are you doing there?
We're doing something like camp up with a few stoners.
Oh, cool. Yaakov, where are you?
Abit Shemesh.
To whom?
To Yisrael Clark.
Oh, Yisrael Clark. Very good. Oh, and you'll be in the front.
Yes, I will be.
If I told that Shabbat, I get lano. Ashu. Bye. If I buy.
Yerushalayim.
Ashu. Pastor Al. Ken, you say where you're going to be?
I'll be in Yerushalayim.
Who are you going to stay with?
My family.
Is he visiting Philadelphia? Father went to us.
What's
that, friends? And Adam?
Tochav
Yaakov. Oh, okay. So he's got an ankle there. Okay.
Tochav Yaakov.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.